Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Tatiana Ferrero Porta, who has taken a painful, frightening journey few of us might survive. Yet she has emerged whole and healthy, and today serves as an inspiration to many through her teaching and practice of yoga. She is the author of Yoga for the Wounded Heart, a Journey, Philosophy, and Practice of Healing Emotional Pain. She is a graduate of Stanford University and New York University, and Tatiana is a recipient of the 2017 Pushcart Prize and a finalist for Blue Shift Journal's Award for Writers of Color. She has taught philosophy and yoga for a decade and serves as an adjunct faculty member at New York University and the City University of New York. Tatiana is also core faculty at Peaceful Generation Now, a New York-based mindfulness program focused on bringing mindfulness practices to educators and to school administrators in the New York tri-state area with the hope of cultivating peaceful classrooms. She lives and teaches in New York. Tatiana, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you have a really compelling, you have a very compelling and moving story. And I think certainly it's something that many of us can be inspired and uplifted from. And your story kind of gives people a sense of hope, a sense that, wow, if someone can overcome the things you've overcome, then just about anything is possible. So why don't you start us on your journey, which started in Colombia, South America.
Right.
So why don't you start us there and take us on your journey?
Sure. So I am originally from Bogota, Colombia, and I lived there with my parents until I was around 9 years old. When I was 8, my father was involved in a head-on collision by somebody who was inebriated. And it was a little bit of a situation, and several people passed away as a result of that and left. My mother became a widow after that. And with just the two of us, my sister, my younger sister, whose name is Vanessa and who plays a big role in the book and a huge role in my life and in my healing. And so it was the three of us, but my mother's family had already moved to the United States back in the 70s. And so at that point, my mother decided, you know what, I need to be with family. And so we came to the U.S. really pursuing, I think my mother's dream was really to pursue that American dream, to come and have a life here that was different and be with her family. The reality was a little bit different, as a lot of our family members really were sort of barely making it, you know, living either on the poverty line or below the poverty line, and we sort of fell through the cracks. And I think the emotional support was there for her when she first arrived. But some years later, my mother sort of fell ill out of nowhere, and she was hospitalized, and we found out very suddenly that she had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, no.
And she was given just a few weeks to live. So at that point, I was 13 years old at that point, and didn't really quite believe or understand what was happening. I thought at that point that orphans were just something that happened in the movies or just something that was so other. When we were children, both of my parents used to volunteer at an orphanage, and it was a place that was in Colombia, a lot of poverty. There's a lot of poverty in my country, and I thought, well, that happens to other people. It doesn't really happen to people like me. And I think that that's something that we experience a lot with grief or with trauma, that we think, okay, that can't be happening here. So at that point, my sister and I ended up becoming my mother's primary caregivers, and we stopped going to school for the most part, because we couldn't afford help. And so we took on the role of taking care of this person who was our mother, and yet through the process of the chemotherapy and the radiation, sort of became almost like a child, because she really couldn't do very much for herself, especially at the end. Then she ended up living longer than what was anticipated. So by the time that I was 14 in that May, she passed away. And then there was a question of where my sister and I would go. But unfortunately, none of my family members could afford taking in two girls. And so that's
okay,
where...
so I want to stop you and I want to ask, mm-hmm. because it's kind of like a Little Orphan Annie story. I mean, what happened for you emotionally and just practically? Here you are, 13 years old. You have a youngest sister. Your mother has passed away. Your father has passed away. You're living in the States, and you have extended family, none of whom can afford to take you in, which basically, I mean, seriously, if it were me, I would really ask that question. Is that really true? Do I really have to go to foster care? I mean, what was going through your mind at that point?
Well, I don't think that there was anything other than trying to understand or wrap my mind around my mother being gone. And so those questions, I'm not sure that they're available to a 13-year-old.
Right.
And at that point, I was living very much in shock and in the grieving process. But what happened was that pretty much as soon as we went on to foster care, there was pretty immediate abuse. And what ensued was that for the next, for essentially until I turned 18, my life was one of living in fear. And so I never really had the opportunity to heal from my mother's passing, from sort of taking the responsibility of my sister and I kind of took on apparently the parent role in our relationship. But for both of us, it was very much about, can we make it to the next day? Can we make it to the next day? And when you look at, for example, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we had a house, we lived in a house, so we weren't worried about where the next meal was coming from, but we didn't have any sort of emotional safety, and a lot of times we didn't have physical safety, and even sometimes we didn't have safety in the sense of being sexually safe.
Were you, excuse me, were you together, the two of you, in the foster care, or were you separated?
So we were together at first until there was an episode with my sister, and the foster dad became very agitated, and he struggled with alcoholism and became very violent and essentially pulled out a gun and kicked my sister out. So then she ended up moving to several more homes than I did, where she also continued to experience emotional, physical, and sexual abuse. So it wasn't unique to this particular environment. And it is something that can happen and happens pretty often in the orphan or in the foster child experience, that those things, for whatever reason, are kind of common. And it's really unfortunate because the circumstances by which a child gets to even come into the foster care or guardianship tend to be unfortunate circumstances. So the child ends up having to deal with whatever the primary layer of misfortune that got them to that system in the first place, plus trying to deal with whatever is going on in the home.
Right,
that said,
right.
Not all homes are like that. I mean, I definitely have friends. I am friends with different people who have been adopted, who were placed in beautiful homes. And at the end of my senior year, my sister was with a really lovely family she was in that home for maybe 8 months. But that's 8 months of safety out of years of really not knowing if you're okay, if you're going to be okay. And that type of stress over a prolonged period of time creates creates trauma in the body, creates trauma in the psyche, in our ability to self-regulate.
Right. And during the pre-interview, you shared with me that you were suffering from obsessive compulsive disorder, panic attacks, anorexia, self-mutilating. You were doing things to try to relieve the depth of anxiety. And what some people don't understand, which is really interesting information, is that anorexia, self-mutilating, things that provoke these neurotransmitter responses, these hormonal responses, are actually done unconsciously to try to relieve the enormous anxiety and the enormous sense of fear or lack of safety in one's life. Do you want to talk about that for a minute? Because I'm sure people listening, many of them may have experienced this, and it's great to kind of hear, what other people have been through and how they were intuitively able to find some kind of a coping mechanism, even if it was not a particularly healthy coping mechanism.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I've been surprised by is how many people have come to me after reading my book and said, my type of OCD is called trichotillomania, which is
the urge to pull out your hair.
Right. And mm-hmm. So by the time when it was in my really bad, I had no eyebrows, I had no eyelashes, I had bald spots all over my head, mm-hmm. and I couldn't really control it. And I'd have people come to me over the last few months and say, you know, I'm a puller. Or I had yesterday after I taught a class, a man come up to me and say, I'm a cutter. And every time that somebody says that to me, it's hushed, and there's a certain degree of sadness and grief and maybe shame around that. And I also am familiar with people who aren't familiar with those experiences on a personal level, who might know somebody or who are just curious that feel like, oh, maybe I can't ask about that. It's so taboo. And so part of one of the reasons why I was very clear and up and forthcoming about my struggle with OCD, trichotillomania, and cutting is because I think that removing some of the layers of shame around that is really important in order to not only to heal, but in order for people to understand why those things happen in the first place. And it's exactly what you said, you know, and it's a different experience to sort of be able to superimpose the psychological understanding of why a psyche might do that, and the experience of actually being in it and not knowing why pulling my hair feels good or mm-hmm. or cutting my skin feels good. Right. But the answer really is, or what I dealt with for so many years, is I have so much pain in my heart. I have so much pain inside of me. And no, like crying isn't enough. Screaming isn't enough. There's just something, there's a catharsis that I'm not getting. And in the moments that I pulled, which that was a little bit more unconscious. I didn't notice when that was happening. It was like a tick. But certainly in the moments that I cut or in the moments that I abstained from food, I had control and I had relief. And it was a sense of, okay, now I'm back in the driver's seat.
Right, exactly. And one of the things I think that is really important, especially if you have a child or you have a relative or a partner, you know, who's experiencing this. I think if we can begin to remember that having control over your life is one of the most important imperatives. We don't talk about this. I mean, we talk about Maslow and we talk about the hierarchy of needs and, you know, safety and security. But what that really represents is having a sense that you are in control and safe. Safety comes from the sense of being in control, that you can plug the leak in the roof and you know where your food is going to come from. So what some of us really don't think about is that the adaptive behaviors that we all have, like smoking cigarettes or overeating or whatever it might be, is really an attempt to control and normalize what someone is experiencing. And you had a really profound, kind of concentration of that in your teen years. Yes.
Right. And so, I mean, how much more loss of control is there than having your foundation pulled out from underneath you as in your parents? No control in that, you know, no control in where you get to live. And then with the sexual abuse, having no control over your body, someone else is taking over. And all of those experiences sort of riddled with fear and confusion. And so in the moment of a little bit of clarity, that little bit of a clarity goes a long way, and that can become sort of an addictive release.
Right, right. And so you really had this powerful experience, and it went on for years, and it was something, and what I said at the beginning, and I think it's really true, I don't know that all of us or many of us could survive something like that. There are many people who don't survive. They turn to drugs. They turn to things that are dangerous, really dangerous, and that take their lives or potentially create a mental or emotional condition where they really are not surviving. So what you went through was enormous, and I'm emphasizing that because the next thing we're going to talk about is the miracle of you finding a very healthy, a very positive, a very healing way of addressing all that you couldn't address when your mother died and you went through foster care, and how you've come out the other end of this, which is really such a magnificent thing to reflect on when you think about it. I mean, you're a young person. You're only 35 years old. There are people who have spent decades upon decades going through homelessness or alcoholism or, you know, gambling addiction, drug addiction. And it took so very long for them to even begin to get help. You had kind of a miracle, wouldn't you say, Tatiana, in the sense that you're a young person. It did not take you a lifetime to begin to heal from the devastation that you experienced with your mother's death. And so I consider it a miracle story, actually, you know, because it's really wonderful. We are going to take a break, and we're going to come back with the rest of your story. But before we go on break, let's just say that you had something happened to you. An angel showed up in your life and guided you. You had a doctor who actually, I mean, who would have thought this? You had a physician actually tell you to go practice yoga. I mean, who does that? You know, and it really was a tremendous gift to you because it really has changed your life and subsequently the life of many, many other people. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will look forward to Tatiana sharing the angel in her life and how this suggestion of practicing yoga for 30 days really started her on a journey that is quite remarkable and quite wonderful for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we're back with Tatiana Forero Puerta. I really hope I'm saying your middle name right.
You're doing a great job.
Tatiana is the author of Yoga for the Wounded Heart, A Journey, Philosophy, and Practice of Healing Emotional Pain. Tatiana, before the break, we were talking about, it's such a great story. I mean, your doctor, of all people, you know, let's face it, this was a number of years ago, even if it was 10, 15 years ago, yoga was not what it is now in our culture. So tell us the story about how your doctor really changed the trajectory of your life.
Right. So, it really is a remarkable story. And to this day, I don't remember the name of the physician, and it's really a wild story. But before the break, you know, you were talking about how some people don't survive. And I was really close to that. I landed in the hospital in the first place after self-mutilation and a suicide attempt, and where I was deemed to be a danger to myself. And after spending some time in the hospital, that's where I met that doctor. So it was really, I was at the bottom. I was in my darkest hour getting an EKG because I was also struggling with heart arrhythmia. And she said, you know, have you ever practiced yoga? And at that point, I had done yoga here and there. I took a class when I was at Stanford, a yoga class. But I said, you know, I've done yoga. She said, no. Have you practiced? I said, I'm not sure what you mean by that. And she said, well, here's your homework. Go and find a place to go do yoga for 30 days. every single day for 30 days. And if you stop one day, you come back and start over. And at that point, you know, the beauty of hitting bottom is that there's nowhere to go but up, right?
Mm-hmm. That's for sure, yeah.
And I really didn't have anything to lose, and I felt like I couldn't, I felt like my life wasn't working, so much so that I didn't want to live it any longer. And then I thought, you know what, this is, why not? And that was the first angel, and I think that there were a couple of angels in my path, because the second angel was the teacher that I met when I went on this journey of trying to figure out where I was going to do this. A yoga teacher that I knew suggested I meet her teacher. And after a short interview, this man sort of looked at my body, looked at my posture, and said, your life is weighing really heavily on you. You know, a technique that years later I now recognize as body reading. And he was able to tell me things about myself just by the way I held my body. And he said, you know, how much do you really want this? And I said, more than anything, really. And he said, okay, well, can you commit to a year? Every single day for a year, come here. And the doors are open for you. But if you miss a day, it's over.
But that's pretty, I mean, let's face it. Come on, seriously. Somebody says to you, to any of us, you have to commit sight unseen. You don't know what's going to happen. You could get pneumonia. You could get hit by a car. You don't know anything, right? Sight unseen, you have to commit to me that 365 days you're going to show up here. That's a real challenge, I would think, Tatiana, right?
Well, I think that I was in such a dire place, and he saw it, that that it was that extreme, that there was no amount of anything else that could happen could compare to what I had just been through. You know, I very much at that point wore my trauma on my body. And I didn't even know it. And one really clear example that he showed me that I was completely unaware is that when I walked, just normally when I walked, I held my arms covering my chest. And it was completely unconscious and hunched over, so that my entire chest was really sort of caving in and my back was very hunched at that point. And I had no clue that was normal for me, that that's how I normally held my body. And he
saw
it.
Your posture was totally self-protective.
Exactly.
You were just in a fetal position. You were walking around. You were erect in a fetal position.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he made that proposition, and I became a very faithful, loyal student, and I studied. And I think that, you know, it's definitely a miracle, but it also speaks to the power of the practice, and that it is that powerful. And it was that powerful for me. Now, on that point, I will say that I don't consider myself like 100% healed, you know, like I'll never carry this with me in my life. I carry it differently. And the way that I relate to my story, to my parents, to my wounding, to my experiences is certainly a much different way of holding and relating to those experiences than it was 15 years ago. But, you know, we're all human and we all have triggers. And I think the difference really is that I have tools now that I didn't before, where if I, you know, a conversation on cutting might still kind of give me that little bit of a dopamine, like, oh, that sounds really good. And it sounds twisted to say it a little bit, but that's in there. There was an addiction. And yet I can breathe through it, acknowledge it instead of being in it. And then decide to practice, or decide to do a breath exercise, or decide to do a certain movement, or whatever. I have a lot of tools at my disposal, and I think that that's really what's missing in when people are engaging with their own healing, and when people can't really see how to get beyond it, is because they're not well endowed with the tools that they would need to deal with those circumstances. So my teacher said something that I love so much, and it's to a novice sailor, a storm out at sea is very scary. But to a senior, very experienced sailor, that storm is a challenge. Because that sailor knows how to tie the knot and where to put the sail and how to spin the wheel. And so it changes, and it really changes our experience of it.
Right. You had said something during the pre-interview. You said yoga is a tool for self-regulation. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a great comment, because what you're describing, whether it's sailing or whether it's living, we have to regulate the situation. And again, it goes back to control, having a sense that you can stay safe, that you can control what is coming at you and not be overwhelmed or be destroyed by the waves or the water or the circumstance. And you had shared about your teacher and, you know, shared all of the healing that you got from practicing yoga for a year. But tell us a little tiny bit about that year. Was it hard at times? Was it challenging? Were there days you almost didn't make it and almost didn't show up?
Yeah, absolutely. But I really took that challenge on as if my life depended on it, because in many ways it did. That was what was amazing about that is that the space that my teacher created for me became my home. The home that I hadn't had since my father died. And so it became that first tier of safety. So a lot of that year was really me crying on a mat. It wasn't about getting there and doing a certain practice necessarily. It was just about showing up. And that's really one of the biggest gems, I think, of the yoga practice and of the mindfulness practice, is that it doesn't really matter all that much what happens. It's more about the fact that you showed up, that's the biggest part of the yoga.
Right. Well, we hear that all the time. There are so many famous people that say, you know, the road to success, the first step is that just show up, you know, that mm-hmm. showing up. I guess that what that was really saying is that when you make a commitment to being present and to being open and receptive, that is the first step to growth, which is really quite wonderful. Do you want to start sharing with us the content of the book and talking about what you'd like the reader, you know, to walk away with?
Sure. So the book is part memoir, where I tell the story of what I essentially told you, but with in a lot more depth. And it's also, so it goes back and forth between the memoir and the philosophy. And my intention in telling the story in that way is that I wanted to show how the philosophy can come to life through an example of life itself. Because the philosophy of yoga, which is what I write about, not so much about the actual postures, are the overlay or the container or the framework. So theoretically speaking, we can sort of overlay it over different types of experiences and see how they play out. And so I propose or I show or bring philosophical concepts from the yogic paradigm, and I say, well, look, this is how it shows up in life. This is how it showed up for me. And furthermore, this is other ways in which it might show up in people's lives. As you mentioned, you know, I have a background in comparative philosophy. And one of the things that I've noticed in the last, you know, decade of teaching philosophy is that people are a little bit intimidated by looking at philosophical texts, often because it does require a little bit of training to know how to get through such texts, but also that people think that philosophy is other, that philosophy is just some, you know, kind of like navel-gazing, and are not really sure how it applies. So my intention was to be very clear and and very applicable. So how does a philosophy apply to our lives, and to show that it's actually not other, that it's actually that is the yoga. The yoga is two parts. The first is the framework. So the idea is that it's a different experience to sort of go about our lives and not really think about it than it is to go about our lives and take a moment to reflect and see, okay, well, what is this experience? How am I reacting? What is my mind doing at this moment, right? And so the yoga philosophy is that framework that gives concepts to experiences that we might not ordinarily name. So that's aspect number one. And then aspect number two is the actual practice. So the practice is putting it, how do we get this to stick to our lives? Because if we just talk philosophy or if we just talk theory, we can do that till we're blue in the face, and it can be really, you know, sort of a fun mental exercise. But really, the gems of it come when we are doing the work in our lives. And one of the questions that I hear a lot is, well, how do I do that? And the answer is really simple, and we've already said it. It's just show up. So the book is divided into a couple of different parts. The last part of the book is a workbook where I give exercises for all of the theoretical principles that I name. So, for example, the first one is about observation, and it's about how we can cultivate a sense of developing our awareness and our observation of all sorts of things, of our behavior, of the words that we use when we're talking about other people, of the language that we use when we're talking about ourselves, of our thought patterns. And so it's short little exercises that you can do. I have two sets, one the at-home practice, so 5 minutes in the privacy of your own home, you know, before you get up in the morning or before you go to bed at night, you just run through these little exercises. And then there's the applied practice, what we do when we're with other people, right? So things so simple, like when you're engaging in a conversation with somebody, so that another set of the principles is allowing. That allowing is a big theme in the book. How we generally have a really difficult time allowing ourselves to be who we are, allowing others to be who they are, and allowing situations to be what they are. And when we don't allow, we experience suffering. We experience discomfort. We want to change the way things are. And that's really uncomfortable. So the idea, and it all comes from the grander sort of yoga philosophy model. The ideas are, well, if we can learn to allow in little places of our lives, then that practice gradually grows. And that's another big theme, is that when you think, oh, I have to go, if I would have thought, I have to go to this studio for a year, I have to study with this teacher for a year every single day, then that's a daunting idea. But if I just say, I have to go today, I have to go show up today, then that's more manageable. And so when we take little chunks and little bits and make our practice about today, then over time, it becomes greater and it becomes deeper and it becomes fuller and it grows in its capacity.
Right. So I think what you're saying is that the practice of yoga is taking place on several levels. One is a mental, an emotional, a spiritual, and then there's the art of the practice of the postures of yoga. So that yoga becomes a way of life. It becomes a philosophy. It becomes an opportunity to grow and change and become more of who we are. The one thing we didn't talk about that I just want to go back, because I want people to understand the enormity of the impact of yoga on your life, is that you wound up getting a full boat scholarship to Stanford University. You did very well. You went to college. You spent your 4 years there studying philosophy and religion. And you did well. And then what happened was, right after you finished college, you had a massive emotional breakdown. And you attempted suicide. You know, your panic was so bad. You had insomnia, you had body dysmorphia, you had a distorted reality, you were having flashbacks of your abuse, and you really didn't feel like life was worth going on. And you wound up in Bellevue Hospital in New York City. And I'm from New York, and I know about Bellevue. It's kind of like one of those, in the old days, it was really the asylum, you know. It wasn't a good place to be. And it was during that time that you met the doctor who gave you the EKG, who had asked you if you had ever practiced yoga. So I think, you know, when we look at the bigger picture, you know, today there is so much hopelessness around opiate addiction. There is so much, suffering and struggling over so many aspects of life that people are going through in this modern culture we're in. But when you hear a story like yours, I mean, this was a pretty, this is a pretty intense situation. So when your yoga teacher saw you, he made the assessment that you really needed to have this year. And so reflecting back on that now, Tatiana, reflecting back on it, how would you describe your journey from a consciousness that was, you know, really on the edge of, as you said, you know, you came pretty close to the edge, to being a person who is in a very short period of time. I mean, in 10, 15 years, look at the growth and the leap that you've made with yoga. How would you describe that for other people? Other people are listening. They may be struggling. They may be suffering. How would you share with them what's possible and what it felt like to take that particular journey?
So it was, for me, it was very much a homecoming into myself. Through the process of having an eating disorder, of having body dysmorphia, of cutting, of panic attacks, which often felt like I was leaving my body or like I was going crazy, I really didn't have a safe landing space. And what the practice gave me, what showing up every day, even if I didn't move, even if I just sat there on my mat and cried. And in fact, that was one of the biggest surprises that I got in that year, was that my teacher never like came up to me and said, "Are you okay? What's wrong?" Nothing like that. He just witnessed me. He just allowed me to grieve what I hadn't had the opportunity to grieve years before, because I was thrown into this unsafe situation. And so what the practice did, the showing up did, was it gave me my body back. It gave me my identity back. It gave me my sense of self. And more importantly, it gave me the tools to remain there. Because, you know, it isn't all sort of fairy tales and butterflies. Like, I've had relapses. But over the years, when I've had a relapse, the time to come back to center just gets shorter and shorter and shorter until... You know, it's been a few years, but I remember the last one that I had, it was more like I caught it before it happened. And so the tools, we get more masterful in the way that we use our tools, so that it's not something as simple as when we accidentally hurt somebody's feelings with our words, and then we realize it 2 weeks later. And like, the practice allows us to realize it 2 days later, and then 2 hours later, and then to not even make that comment, you
right,
know?
Exactly.
So we get better at using the tools. And it was really my devotion to that practice, plus the power of the practice itself, that gave me agency back and allowed me to feel safe where I was. Because then it wasn't about where I was in the world. It was about really inhabiting my body and my psyche and my consciousness in a way that felt good. And that was like really an aha, like really a layer taken off. Like, I don't have to live with this pain. I can be okay right here. And that's a gift. That's life.
It's a pretty startling testimony to the practice of a discipline, to committing oneself to being present to your own feelings, to your own life, and how when most of us are living our life, I think we lose the capacity for being fully present. As you said, it can take 2 weeks after we hurt somebody's feelings to say, oh, gee, maybe I hurt that person's feelings, because we're not really present. We're distracted. We're dealing with ways of coping with our own feelings of not being safe or not being loved or not being whatever. And so it sounds as if your commitment to the discipline is a huge byproduct of living a more mindful, being more present, being invited into that by your doctor and your teacher, that the outcome of all of that, your commitment, I mean, it took courage to make that commitment. And we're going to talk more about that courage, Tatiana. We've got a very, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will only have a little bit of time left to talk, but we want to talk about your courage. We want to talk about how all of us can make that choice. We can choose courage. We can choose ourselves. And then we want to know more about the work you're doing, where you're teaching, your website, and how people, of course, can avail themselves of your book. Don't go away. We will be right back, and we will finish talking to Tatiana about the work, the wonderful work that she's doing with yoga.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. work within healthcare environments, or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we're back with Tatiana Ferrero-Puerta, who is the author of Yoga for the Wounded Heart, A Journey, Philosophy, and Practice of Healing Emotional Pain. Tatiana, this is such an inspiring conversation because, you know, we're getting into territory that I think we all need to think about, reflect on all of the things that we want to have in our lives, which is dominion over our choices, our feelings, having control over our behavior. Talk to us about the courage. What was it? Was it the fear? Was it hitting the bottom? But what gave you the impetus to have the courage to make that choice to commit yourself to yoga?
Well, it was for me at that point either that or I didn't. It was either that or nothing. But I do have to say that I was very fortunate that when my parents were around, they were incredibly loving, kind, intelligent, beautiful people. And I did have a sense of what goodness was. And I saw that sense of what goodness was again when my sister picked me up from Bellevue. And I saw, oh my goodness, my pain is hurting another person. Like, how can I do this to my sister who has also gone through everything that I've been through? So sometimes I think that one of the messages of the book is that when we're caught in our pain, we don't realize that our pain can actually hurt other people, and that it behooves us to really heal our wounds, because when we don't, we aren't fully cognizant of the effects of our behaviors on others. And so, you know, it's a cycle because we're a part of a greater canopy where we can't not be contextual. So by that same token, when we heal, that healing reverberates. And we can heal others just by our own healing presence, just by us doing our work. We're healing future generations with the way that we relate. So it was really seeing my sister, the remembrance of my parents, and saying, like, I need to do something different. My mother was a very tenacious woman, and she was just not one to give up. And I thought, you know, I can't give up. I need to do something different. But I think you hit the nail on the head with the word discipline. And that's really what it is that has the greatest shift. The good news, or sort of the gospel of the whole thing, is that it gets easier because it becomes more enjoyable the further down the path you are. And it has to do very much with our biology and with our neurobiology, because as soon as something becomes ingrained and a habit, then it's almost harder to not do it. So nowadays, it's harder for me not to practice than it is to practice, because that has become home base. So, you know, there is such a thing as like our positive addictions, or we can choose how to steer our ship if we understand the way the ship works. But it does at first require that courage and that initial commitment to kind of take off. But really, again, the journey becomes so much more joyful and so much more playful and so much more lighthearted, because we're healing and because we feel good, and then it's just the way that our lives become.
Yes, exactly. Tell us about your sister. How is she doing? What has, you said she was a very big part of the book and a big part of your life and your story. So tell us a little bit. We've got a few minutes left. If you can give us at least a minute to tell us about your sister, how she's doing, and you know, how your friendship and your relationship with each other is growing.
Oh, she's wonderful, and she's really my right hand, and she came with me on book tour and took care of my little one and her little one, so we're both going through motherhood. I have a 2-year-old, and she has a 1-year-old, so now we're growing together in this whole new way, in this whole new path. Our relationship is so much more balanced in the sense that we really play mother for each other, parents for each other, parents for our children, and she's also a yogi in her own right. With her mindfulness practice. And it makes it so joyful for me because we're both very interested in growing in our awareness, in growing in our mindfulness in this path. So it's really such an amazing blessing that we're both on the same path because we have the same language and the same tools.
That's an inspiring story, inspiring that you came from a loving family, that your foundation was one of safety and security and love. You had a strong mother, and I'm sure you had a lovely father. And they gave you the foundation and the tools. So many times we hear stories of people who ultimately triumph over their very difficult life circumstances. And what seems to be at the root of it is to have the what they call the foundation of roots and wings. That our parents and our ancestors, you know, there's a lot today going on about epigenetics and what gets passed down over generations. So that's something for all of us to think about. You know, what are we giving to our children? What have we gotten from our parents? This sense of being loved, accepted, and safe, and being safe. It's such a wonderful legacy to pass on, and it sounds like you and your sister will be passing that on together to your children. So that's really a great ending to that particular part of the story. Tell us where people can get your book, how they can contact you. Can you tell us about your website and a little bit about where they can find the book, please?
Sure. So the book and the book website is yogaforthewoundedheart.com. You can get the book through the website. You can get the book on Amazon. Some bookstores also have it. Yoga studios sometimes have it. But really the best way would be Amazon or the website. And you can also read more about my work there. I work one-on-one and in classes with people to really help them through the process of establishing practice and of seeing how the practice sort of converses with our lives, you know, our life circumstances.
Wow. Well, I just want to say that just having the opportunity to meet you and talk to you and hear your story has been just a gift and a treat. I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to come on the show, and I thank you so very much. And I want to say to the yes, no, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor.
Oh, it's the pleasure is all mine. And to the audience, to our listeners, don't forget to come back next week when we have another uplifting, inspiring, and educational program on Living Above the Drama.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.